visits for those with respiratory issues and other health concerns. From Roaring Fork Family Practice in Willits and Carbondale to internal medicine in Glenwood Springs, the physicians at Valley View are available for you. More at vvh.org.
KDNK's public affairs program for Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, and today our guests are Isabel Allende, James Tipton, D.H. Lawrence, Gary Snyder, Robert Creeley, Pat Bowles, Simon Ortiz, John Macker, Wendell Berry, Karen Chamberlain, Valerie Nuzzo, and Sarah Borns, all poets whose words are important to hear during April Poetry Month. I'd like to start with James Tipton's Letters from a Stranger with a foreword by Isabel Allende to give us an understanding of how poetry can inspire us and change our lives. One day during the summer of 1994, I received a letter from a stranger. He said he was writing to me from the top of the Andes and described an infinite horizon of purple mountains, indigo skies, and the abysmal beauty of the ancient stones of Machu Picchu, where the spirits of dead Incas still roam. In that impressive setting, the stranger was reading one of my books, and maybe the story resonated with that landscape, and he felt compelled to get in touch with me. A few weeks later, I received another letter from him, this time from a little town in the mountains of Colorado. His letter contained an unusual gift, a story. Not long ago, he said, a woman was taken to an alcoholic rehabilitation hospital in western Colorado, so drunk that she could not remember her name. She had been on the railroad tracks making love with a man that she had picked up in a bar. She was wearing a torn wedding dress and had a bouquet of dead flowers in her hands. "I will find out the rest of the story if you are interested," offered the stranger. I was hooked, not only by the fascinating mystery of that woman, but mainly by the man who had the intuition to send me that precious gift. How did he know that I could never resist such a bait? I replied to his letter immediately, and that is how our friendship began. It was a bad time in my life, a time of mourning and sad darkness. My daughter had died, and I had written a painful memoir, and I had the feeling that there was nothing else for me to do in this world. But Jim Tipton kept on writing to me, even when I failed to answer. His poems started to come one by one, several a week, and I found myself waiting for the mail with a secret anxiety that I did not want to admit, even in the silence of my heart. Slowly, something happened to me. I began to open myself to that voice that was most certainly masculine and strong, but also tender and sinuous. Often the voice would almost be insane, and precisely in those moments it touched me the most. Jim Tipton's poems would go deep down inside my sorrow and swim like small fish. Sometimes they seemed to surface while I was driving to my office in Sausalito or walking in the forest where I scattered my daughter's ashes. The poems brought me their soft light and gave me back the love of words that I almost had forgotten. Some lines of the poems stayed with me for days. They were like shadows, like sounds I heard in sleep, like ships that slip unnoticed into the port at night. The poet seemed as solitary as I was at that time, but he had found the solace and peace that I did not have. He walked in the nature as I did, but while I was crying, he was noticing the smells of honey and sage and the shapes of rocks and trees, the golden specks in the eye of his dog, the murmur of bees, all those little things that suddenly were transformed into treasures because the observer was a poet. extraordinary poems. So simple and so honest, like an arrow straight to my longing. And thus, one poem at a time, our friendship steadily evolved, and the stranger became a dear friend. I have a very big basket where I keep our correspondence. When I bought it, I told the salesperson the basket was for love letters, and she smiled mockingly. "You are an optimist," she said. "No, I am practical," I replied. It filled up fast. Soon I will have to go back for another one. In the meantime, Jim Tipton kept on sending me handmade candles, books, stories, and poems. I replied with parcels of exotic teas, of exotic names, and handmade cookies. He also sent me his picture. A tan man with sharp blue eyes, white hair, and a beard, the captain of a pirate ship. At the end of 1995, for Christmas, he finally came to visit me in California. I recognized him immediately at the airport. He smelled of honey. We hugged each other with the easy confidence of a brother and a sister. All my family was reunited that Christmas, including my parents, who had come from Chile. Introduced Jim Tipton as the man who writes like Pablo Neruda. During almost a decade of life in the United States, I have rarely found any contemporary poems in English that have the wild and tumbling images that are found in the poetry of my country. Chile is the land of poetry. It was brought up reciting by heart. Poetry is like bread and water for the Chilean people. It does not belong to those who write it, but to those who need it, as someone once said. And who doesn't need poetry? But Neruda, Jim Tipton, is a man of the heart and the senses. It is rare to find poetry that he has cascading energy and purity. How can I write about these things? I've never been very interested in academic insights, and I find most literary scholarship quite boring. I much prefer to read stories and poems for the simple pleasure that they bring to my soul. Some days a window opens by itself and poetry comes in and sometimes returns to our lives that we did not know that we had lost. Then some fragrance becomes incense and we see the world in a different light, and the milk that we put on our cereal takes on the flavor of some forgotten love potion. Every time I get a letter from that stranger that is now my friend, I hear his voice like rushes of wind from the deserts of western Colorado. If I close my eyes, I can see him walking with Ananda, his beloved dog, under the brilliant heavens and listening in the dark for another poem. And I am thankful that this man, who is almost a hermit, stubbornly refusing to live any life but his own, has chosen me for a friend. When Jim told me he intended to publish this collection of his poems, I asked him if I could write a brief foreword because I need to share my gratitude with his readers. Jim Tipton's poems have accompanied me like faithful nightingales in the long night that followed my daughter's death. Now I'm back on my feet. I have the will to live and the key to joy, the joy to write again. Now I can read Jim's poetry with new delight, lingering at the images, the magic, and the language. I cherish these letters from a stranger that talk of ordinary experiences, wings, canyons, rocks, flesh, but mainly that other extraordinary experience, love. These poems are written by a man who was born to write poetry. The poem, "Some Days I Wake Up Walking Over the Desert," by Jim Tipton, Letters from a Stranger. Some days I wake up walking over the desert and see pieces of me everywhere. In the knuckles of the ancient trees, in the tumbleweed of soul in the spring wind, in the tiny flowers rooted on heart rock. Even a piece of sleep that I thought was mine flew in the blue wing of day out of a dead limb. Ah, this gathering and gathering of self, this brown joy in the eyes of a beloved dog, this dust that dances into blossom, this little notebook that is the earth, this endless love that when we least expect it knocks on our door and says, "Let the day begin." insisting with the only life I know on some peace at the end of solitude and desperation. I have arrived here at this desert place where magic that few would want rings light around me, where grace comes to hoard me one step at a time. And now for D.H. Lawrence's poem, Escape. I had the privilege of being on the D.H. Lawrence Ranch for archaeological field school back in the 60s and went and visited his tomb up the hill from where we were. Escape. When we get out of the glass bottles of our own ego, and when we escape like squirrels from turning in the cages of our personality and get into the forest again, we shall shiver with cold and fright, but things will happen to us so that we don't know ourselves. Cool, unlying life will rush in, and passion will make our bodies taunt with power. We will stamp our feet with new power, and old things will fall down. We shall laugh, and institutions will curl up like burnt pages. Next is Gary Snyder. Danger on Peaks is his book. When I was in college at UNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I heard Gary read in what was called the Kiva, named after the ceremonial Kiva of Pueblo Indians, even in prehistoric times. And as a young second-generation poet, Gary inspired me to even write more poetry. A few of his poems. This one is called Sky Sand. Cottonwoods stream bank, splashing, fording up the creek bed. Black peony called, pee, 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 here, near. Mexican black hawk cruising, squint at the sky, shoes full of sand. He wrote that in Aravaipa Canyon in Arizona. And then a few short pieces from Glacier Ghosts. Nap on a granite slab, half in the shade, you can never hear enough sound of wind in the pines. A certain poet needling Allen Ginsberg by the fireside campfire, how come they all love you? Starting to glissade down the steep snowfield, they say, Gary, don't. But I know my ice axe. Ice scrape ponds, scraggly pines, long views, flower, mad marshes, so many places for a wandering boulder to settle forever. Coming back down the trail from Glacier Lake, KJ lifts her t-shirt. Look, I'm getting boobs. Two tiny points, age 9. And then I'd like to read a poem that I wrote called The Other World. And it has to do with a friend from the Southern Ute Reservation who came out to check to whether or not the site I found, the archaeological site, was a sacred site or not. You decide after this poem. The Other World. The eagle feather headdress was missing from the picture of the holy man that September, standing at Jenny Lake, making the crooked places straight, waiting for the eagle's flight, opening up the way. Said he left the ceremonial garb at home, along with all the ancient secrets imparted while we were on the red road together in the forest. This day we made offerings, atoning for the curse of time, ancestors, sun dancers, warriors, gather around us in ceremony's rainbow gown. All the people who ever lived are watching us. Blankets over shoulders, we place tobacco dreams, heavy as boulders on the holy land. Offer a sip of water now, then again. Pour the rest toward the east. leaving them part of our soul sandwich. Temperature dropping 20 degrees suddenly, altars rise up from the earth through November snow. We give the last offerings of who we really are, measuring off our days, appeasing spirits. We turn from sacred ways, step off the hallowed ground. The planet spaceship turns, we let go, get into the pickup, head home, closing all the doors behind us. Robert Creeley was a poet that lived in Placidas, New Mexico when I was there in Placidas. And he had a lot of really good poems and poetry readings there when he was in town. He didn't live there all the time. But a couple of his poems I'd like to read. One is called The Rain. All night the sound had come back again, and again falls this quiet, persistent rain. What am I to myself that must be remembered, insisted upon so often? Is it that never the ease, even the hardness of rain falling will have for me? Something other than this, something not so insistent. Am I to be locked in this final uneasiness? Love, if you love me, lie next to me, before me like rain, the getting out of the tiredness, the fastidiousness, the semi-lust of intentional indifference. Be wet with a decent happiness. Another poem, Fire. Clear smoke, a fire in the far off, haze of summer, burning somewhere. What is a lonely heart for, if not for itself alone? Do the questions answer themselves? All wonder brought to a reckoning? When you are done, I am done. Then it seems that, one by one, we can leave it all to go on. When I lived in Placitas, New Mexico, a friend of mine who later became a publisher of poems wrote this poem for me called Against the Time of the Calendar. The city's urgent company is forgotten as your time is gripped by the seasons. All the hates are wounded when the hunter is alone in the sun. What grows by wet demand from the earth will be eaten with the Indian ghost of autumn. The creek has gone dry for a month. The dogs are asleep in the corn. Everything that haunts the canyon walls makes the ritual years of words an ancient funeral. Water beating on the skin of the washing girls glistens like the blind man's mind. The horses are a sorrow we link to the stars. What will we learn from the winter? You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program For Land's Sake. I'm your host, Bill Kite, and today we're reading poetry for Poetry Month, the month of April. And I also lived in Placidas. A friend would come to visit me occasionally, and he's an Acoma Indian poet. And in his book, After and Before the Lightning, I'd like to read his poem, Beauty Unmatched. Icy bits of snow skittering is a sign of the tilting planet as we drive back from winter. The hills are fluorescent blue. Nothing can match this beauty. It is ours now, the pink evening lunging toward us gently, the sky mantled all around. It is ours. Let the planet fly. We would cling without a word, knowing mystery is definite in our dreaming kin. Our stories and songs heard widely as anything that holy ever was. Beauty without question, unable to be described, simply accepted for what it is as skittering snow, blue prairie, and a pink lunging sky. John Macker is a poet friend who lived in Glenwood Springs and now lives in Las Vegas, New Mexico. And in his book, Underground Sky, is a poem called Desert Redoubt. It's easy to forget where you are, that this is the desert after a winter's blessing of helter-skelter snow. Now, time is framed by the wind. Summer descends as if beneath a sweltering weight. Rabbits cross the field out back, sluggish and silent. My hounds have given up the breathless gift of the chase to advancing age. The swift, nuanced, scattered clouds, the hot devil winds, blow the ground dry. Gradually disperse, and we are what they leave behind. In the creosote, the playas, in the shelters, caves, and redoubts, agape with neither self-pity nor wonder, in the grosbeak song, the yucca blossom, not totally without our summer charms, we wonder, after the prospects of rain have dispersed, how close to a heaven this dry land feels, here, so close to the human bone. There are many poets that write about nature and the land and being outdoors, and one of those is Wendell Berry, and I really like his poem, The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, a fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Karen Chamberlain was really a fine poet, and unfortunately, she passed away in Glenwood Springs in 2010. We had a poetry festival for her for a couple of years in Carbondale. This poem from The Geography of Hope, Poets of Colorado's Western Slope, is called Indian Summer. Yellow leaves swirl under the streetlight as I come up the walkway where today I planted bulbs. Red tulips. In darkness, not yet brittle with frost, again I smell black, turned earth, leathery leaf, and think of those shapes waiting, buried like ivory skulls of dolls. Well, a man whose hand had just touched mine drives away into the night. Inside, I switch off the light and climb the stairs, asking for spring. Red tulips, asking for snow, a winter cold enough for sleep. And then Valerie Nuzzo, another poet friend of mine, has a couple of short poems. First is called Two Ravens, and Naked Underneath is the name of the book she published these in. Two ravens walking up the path to the barn, shoulder to shoulder, deep in conversation. I overhear them. She thinks we're crows. Then one last poem. I don't quite have time for that second poet poem of Valerie's. This is a poem called Expose. A good time for reading it. It's by Sarah Bournes. We've all been exposed, not necessarily to the virus, though maybe, who knows. We've all been exposed by the virus. Corona is exposing us, exposing our weak sides, exposing our dark sides, exposing what normally lies far beneath the surface of our souls, hidden by the invisible mask we wear, now exposed by the paper mask we can't hide far enough behind. Corona is exposing our addiction to comfort, our obsession with control, our compulsion to hoard, our protection of self. Corona is peeling back our layers, tearing down our walls, revealing our illusions, leveling our best laid plans. Corona is exposing the gods we worship, our health, our hurry, our sense of security, our favorite lies, our secret lust, our misplaced trust. Corona is calling everything into question. What is the church without a building? What is my worth without an income? How do we plan without certainty? How do we love despite risk? Corona is exposing me, my mindless numbing, my endless scrolling, my careless words, my fragile nerves. We've all been exposed, our junk laid bare, our fears made known. The Band-Aid is torn, the masquerade done. So what now? What's left? Clean hands, clear eyes, tender hearts. What Corona reveals, God can heal. Come, Lord Jesus, have mercy on us. You've been listening to Katie and Caves for Land's Sake. Until next Tuesday, May the 12th at 4:30, this is your host, Bill Kite, asking whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.